Is your child struggling with a specific subject or need help with homework? Are they asking questions that you're not sure you can fully answer? IXL Learning is an online learning program for kids. It covers math, language arts, science, and social studies. IXL is designed. This program will improve your kids' grades. Studies done in almost every state in the country, the kids who had IXL are consistently doing better. Powered by advanced algorithms, IXL gives the right help to each kid no matter the age or personality. And it doesn't have to eat up all your time. One subscription gets you everything for all the kids in your home, pre-K to 12th grade. So don't miss out. 1 in 4 students in the U.S. are learning with IXL. IXL is used in 95 of the top 100 school districts in the U.S. Make an impact on your child's learning. Get IXL now. And listeners can get an exclusive 20% off IXL membership when they sign up today at IXL.com/audio. Visit IXL.com/audio to get the most effective learning program out there at the best price.
Phase Zero Spotlight episode starts right now. We're very excited about this one. Thank you so much. If you're listening to us, if you hear our voices right now, that means you're listening to us in podcast form. This is when you get the little extra spiel about our experience creating the Spotlight episode. I'm BD, joined today by Jamie Jurak.
Hello, everybody.
We got Aaron Perrine.
What's going on, people?
And our special guest on this episode is Madam Web Director S.J. Clarkson. This is a pretty cool one. We all went out and saw Madam Web on the Sony lot. Was that anybody's first time on the Sony lot?
It was my first time, and that lot is really cool. That might be my favorite lot that I've been to. I just wanted to hang out there.
It was cool. They have like a giant rainbow going across the whole place right outside the theater. They have like a Sony picture store. Aaron, what'd you think of that?
It was pretty wild just walk by and just see like a Cobra Kai jacket and like the Ecto-1 sticking out of a building. That was pretty cool.
Yeah, it was cool. If you could like... Who knows what's being filmed right down a couple like studio lot blocks away. There's just a bunch of warehouses and studio stuff right there. We went into some little sneaky private theater and got to see Madam Web literally underground on the Sony lot. It was pretty cool. By now, all of our thoughts and all of that is available on social media about Madam Web. Our bonus episode, if by the time you're listening to this, it's either available now or coming soon. I'm not sure the order of everything that's going to be released right while we're recording this thing, but this is an S.J. Clarkson interview for the director of Madam Web, which is going to have spoilers in it. So if you haven't seen Madam Web, that means maybe check it out first. If you care about spoilers, we did go into great detail. She talked about some really cool stuff in this interview. I really thought it was interesting. We talked about the costumes. Like, what kind of stuff did you guys enjoy most about this interview?
She was just cool. She was somebody that I wanted to like go have like a drink with. She was just a neat person. And she had some jokes. She was making all of us laugh. And that was really fun.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's always nice to encounter these directors that really, really care about the product so much. Like, you could tell she had really thought through a lot of this movie and making it all feel very real. So you guys are really going to enjoy this one. She got a personality on her. I like that lady.
Yeah. Yeah. It makes me personally appreciate the movies more when I get to talk to these people and they show like a level of care and thoughtfulness and just genuine appreciation for working in the Marvel world. Cause I mean, we're in here every week. Like, we care. We want to know that they care too. And honestly, like some of our previous Spotlight guests, like you guys talked to the Guardians of the Galaxy VFX team, Tom Hiddleston, Amon Vellani, talk about people who care. I mean, come on. Like, it just makes it that much more fun to talk to them, that much more fun to watch their work. So Madam Web is now playing in theaters. Obviously, if you're listening to this, you know that. You may have seen it. Hopefully you have, because this is full spoilers. I mean, we're talking about spoilers for the end of the movie, not in the ocean spray bottle kind of way, even though that did come up too.
Yes,
and honestly,
it did.
I felt bad for bringing it up based on her reaction. I was like, oh.
But it was funny. Like, you know, like,
it was.
Yeah. She also didn't seem upset by the question, just of the situation.
Exactly. And also, I asked in the interviews that are on Phase Zero's YouTube channel and on comicbook.com, I asked Tahar Rahim about when the photos of Ezekiel Sims, like him as Ezekiel Sims in that kind of spider suit, were online. I was like, you know, what, you know, your first reveal is this sniped shot of you on a bridge set. You know, what happens to you on that day? What does that feel like? Is it exciting? Is it disappointing? And he was very candid about how much that sucked. Like, he was like, I really wanted to have that moment. I couldn't show my friends and family. And it's, you know, it's not just Madam Web that happened to. That happens to everything. We've seen Deadpool 3 stuff, Daredevil Born Again. Every day you open Twitter, there's a new photo. So whether it's a Lego set or paparazzi, these things get out there. But in any case, we got to talk about a lot of cool stuff with the people from Madam Web. And this is the tip of the iceberg here. This is most of the iceberg, actually. This is the Phase Zero Spotlight episode with SJ Clarkson. Without further ado, Jamie, Aaron, thank you for co-hosting this one with me. This was a fantastic, fun interview. I hope everybody listening enjoys. Leave a 5-star review, share our show, play it for your mom, play it for your dog, and subscribe to the channel on YouTube. Enjoy the interview. See you in a moment.
Knowing how to speak and understand a new language can be an invaluable tool when traveling, meeting new friends, or just even to master a new skill. But it's not always simple when you're bogged down by textbooks and structure classes. That's why so many people trust Rosetta Stone. Rosetta Stone is the most trusted language learning program, available on desktop or as an app. It truly immerses you in the language you want to learn, like Spanish, French, Italian, Chinese, and more. You won't just be studying English translations. The Rosetta Stone intuitive process helps you pick up a language naturally, first with words, then phrases, then sentences. Don't put off learning that language. There's no better time than right now to get started. For a very limited time, listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off. Visit rosettastone.com/rs10. That's 50% off unlimited access to 25 language courses for the rest of your life. Redeem your 50% off at rosettastone.com/rs10 today.
SJ Clarkson, welcome to the Phase Zero podcast. We've been looking forward to this one.
Thank you. Me too. It's so nice to meet you all.
Our pleasure. Thank you for hanging with us.
Of course.
Oh, let's dive into it. So
this
exciting.
Is, by the way, just for anybody listening, this will have spoilers for Madam Web in it. We will release the non-spoilery stuff before the movie. If you're listening to this in its entirety, that means you've seen Madam Web already and you're listening to us dissect the movie with director SJ Clarkson.
No spoilers here. No spoilers until after the movie.
Exactly.
Hello, I'm Jamie. And I'm curious because this is not your first bout with Marvel. You've directed episodes of Jessica Jones and The Defenders. How did this experience differ for you?
Well, you know, it's obviously a big, massive movie, so that's kind of different. But, you know, I must say that I'm so grateful that I got to dip my toe into the Marvel Universe with JJ because, you know, I had a little bit of a foundation there. I had a little bit of familiarity with it. You know, I was able to play around with, you know, this other sassy woman who's a little bit abrasive. So I was able to bring a little bit of that to it, you know. But obviously for me, when I first got the script, I found it so the potential of someone using their mind as a superpower intriguing and something that I hadn't seen before. So that's really what drew me to it.
You know, actually, this isn't the next question we have written down. I can't believe we didn't even write this down, but with starting in Jessica Jones and Defenders, I do would love your thoughts. The fact that a lot of those folks are coming back to Marvel, are you hoping to go direct them ever again?
Oh, listen, if I get the call, let me know.
That would be awesome.
Yes.
No, but back to Madam Web here. This is an interesting group of characters that you chose as the roster because in comics, they do interact sometimes, but it's very rare for them to get an opportunity to have, I mean, this level of teamwork together. I'd love to hear about landing on the team of Cassie, Julia, Maddie, and Anya as the Spider-Woman you used in Madam Web.
Well, I think, first of all, I got sent a script with a lot of this in it already, so I have to share the credit with it. You know, I can't just sit there. It was all me. You know, there's a lot of brilliant brains behind pulling this together, not to mention the wonderful creators of Madam Web. But I just thought, how exciting to take a character on the periphery, right, and make her the center, and then find other characters that are sort of characters in their own right, front and center, and bring them together as a team and figure out how that sort of all came together and where that might lead in the future was just a really exciting prospect.
It's interesting how the three girls don't fully have their origin stories yet in this movie. We only really see visions of them as the Spider Women. Is that something you were ever going to explore in this movie? Did you have visions of how that might unfold?
Well, I thought it would be a bit greedy, like, you know, to do four origin stories. Like, you know, that's not really fair, is it? I got to share it. Come on. You know, I mean, first and foremost, it's Madam Web, right? But I hope the exciting thing about it is this is a tease, you know, and I think the origin story of the girls are, you know, we're given hopefully a sort of a hint of the spirit of who they are. We've tried to stick to the spirit from the comic books and draw from that and find out who they are and get a little bit of their sass and a little bit of their character coming through. But, you know, that's a lot of story to tell, I think, in one. And I think it wouldn't do any of them justice to try and sort of crowbar or cram it all into one movie, right? So I think it's Madam Web's and here's kind of the development of something else underneath it. But yeah, I thought that was probably a bit too greedy. They'd be like, get out. You've already done JJ. Now Madam Web. And now all of them, no, give someone else a chance.
Well, speaking about like sort of carrying this torch forward, Cassie gets to wear a full Madam Web suit by the end of the movie. I was wondering about that. I'm like, how is she going to move with no feet? But you did manage to sort of work in elements of that costume too, because Dakota was really excited because it's like got like flared pants. Can you guys talk about like the suit? Can we talk about that?
Yeah, she borrowed mine. She went through my wardrobe and she went, "This is fabulous." And I said, "We can fit in it." But you know, we managed to squeeze her in. So, you know, no, that's the genius of Nyla Dixon. Okay. You just get Nyla Dixon, who of course did Lord of the Rings, Oscar winning for that. And she's an amazing costume designer. And she so is about character, and she trawled through those comics and sort of drew out the best bits and everything else. But I think because the movie started in the 1970s and, you know, DJ's jacket, you know, Cassandra's jacket is actually based on a vintage 1973 jacket that we tried on her that we absolutely loved. And then 24 hours before production started, as I do, had an 11th hour idea. I went, wouldn't it be great if that was red? And Nyla looked at me in that sort of pained way that she does, but she knew it was a good idea. And so the tailors, God bless them, spent the next 24 hours, like, you know, with glasses and sewing hand by hand this jacket. You know, so it felt like, you know, the costume itself, when she does eventually get to put on, you know, the big suit, she was like, forget your jumpsuit, I'm going to have my own. And so we then sort of kitted her out on this one that definitely had some sort of nod to the 70s. I love the 70s. You know, I've 70s films have always been my influence. So anytime I can get a pair of flares on, I'm in.
I love it. I love that you guys use practical costumes. I feel like superhero films in general, or a lot of films, when they can get away from practical stuff, they're starting to just lean into CGI. Can you talk about that decision to have Nyla's incredible work getting to bring these Spider Women, these and Ezekiel Sims suit to life instead of choosing to computerize them?
I think it's like everything and everything I've tried to do with the film. And I come from theater originally, which is all smoke and mirrors. It's all about sort of creating the illusion on stage. And so even with the clairvoyance itself, most of it was in camera. It's me with a dioptra and a flashlight and splicing through it and then editorially chipping around at it. And I wanted to keep as much of it grounded as possible. You know, we use the word organic a lot, but I think what that's sort of representing is a feeling that it's real, that it's grounded, that it's accessible. You know, because sometimes it isn't accessible, but like you could get that costume, which I think is so cool. And you know, it often bemuses me where they just sort of pop onto these costumes because it sort of takes it out of the reality for me, you know. So, and also just as a director to see your cast come out dressed as superheroes. I mean, thank God I was wearing a mask because I was grinning from ear to ear. I was so excited beyond belief. I think I might have welled up a bit, but obviously I didn't want people to see that. I'm British. We don't cry. So I was just like, you know, I'm not emotional at all. You look really good. You look all right. It's all right. You know, like that. But honestly, I was like the Cheshire Cat grinning from ear to ear, welling up, going, look at how amazing this cast look.
That's amazing. That's so cool. Our first look at the full Madame Web costume, it came on that Ocean Spray bottle. And there's always like, it's either a Lego set or it's like something. With these Marvel movies, there's always a way that these things, there's snipers on set with their long lens photography. What happens, like you guys, I know everybody goes to extreme lengths to try to protect these looks and these secrets and these images. So what happens on the day when that gets out in the world? Is that like, oh, cool, people are seeing it? Or is like, now we got to find our way to reveal this? Like, what happens that day?
I don't think I'm allowed to say what I feel on that day because I think it'll be like, bleep, 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 you know, because you just... You know, for the fans, you're so excited about making this. You know, you want the fans to see it and love it. And, you know, people have then looked up this character and what are they going to do with it? How are we going to make it different? You know, and what they're going to look like. And, you know, we walk around, they have to wear these gray capes on set and, you know, that, you know, covering themselves up. And you try and you know, and it's secretive because you want it to be such an experience, right? Because otherwise we just go, oh, look at this, look at this. You want to kind of allow the audience to really enjoy it as it should be. So, you know, look, it's always upsetting when that happens. But look, like, what's the old adage? No publicity, all publicity is good publicity or something like that. So yes, I guess it's great. But, you know, for me, I just really want, you know, the audience to see it as it should be in the movie and for it to come when it comes, because it's quite a special moment when it does.
Listen, I get it. I feel like I've seen all of Deadpool 3 already and the trailer's not even here.
Right?
Oh. I want to bring up Ezekiel Sims a bit and talk about how there are a few times referencing his backstory and how he comes from nothing. How thoroughly did you flesh out his past as a villain, and did the film cut any of that out?
Look, I think again, a little bit like what we talked about with the spiders earlier, you know, you want to give as much time as you can, but also I want the movie to be streamlined and feel like it's agile and keep propelling you forward, that there's a propulsion to it that I really wanted. And I felt that, you know, Tahara and I talked about it quite a lot about how much we can get in, how much we can see of it. And I felt the opening at least gave an insight into him and sort of into the immediacy of him as a character, you know, and I think by setting the stall out. And it's also like, unless you're going to really explore that, we had ideas of how we might show that, how might we have flashbacks for him. But I'm like, hang on. We've got clairvoyance and he's got a nightmare. And if I start doing flashbacks, like, what am I going to do for the flashbacks? This is a whole thing going on. And then it felt like it was going to be a scene of dialogue describing it more. And I was like, I felt that Tahar is so strong as an actor. His conviction in the performance and the psychology of his kind of like wrestle with Ezekiel and needing to survive, I felt that was just so potent and sort of evident that it didn't need it. I mean, he carries so much of that by the depth of what he brings to the screen, you know. So, you know, could I have spent more time on him? Without doubt. I could have spent more time on all of them. But, you know, you're trying to cherry pick the best bits to make it the best ride possible so that, you know, everyone can go on the journey, enjoy the movie and the narrative for what this narrative is, and then allow time for other things later on, maybe.
He did have such a good presence on screen, and his voice lends itself to a good villain. When I sat across from him for the interview, I was like, please don't hurt me. Please don't hurt
me. Yeah, but he's the loveliest man, isn't he? He's so,
yes, absolutely.
So nice. That's mm-hmm. It's always the good guys that play the best villains.
Yeah, I do have a question, because I've noticed a lot of the Sony Marvel movies, they keep them pretty tight. They keep them close to 90 minutes, hour 45. This one comes in under 2 hours. I would just love to hear, working within like the studio world of Marvel and Sony and all that, was there ever like let's keep it this runtime? Or do you just kind of get freedom to tell the story as you want to?
I think it was more me wanting it to be, you know, I wanted to keep it sort of spelt and streamlined and you know, because I know I like going to the movies and wanting more, you know, mm-hmm. and I felt, you know, you don't want to sort of outstay your welcome, I like to say, you know what I mean? You want to be able to sort of like go on the ride and kind of like leave them wanting more in a way, you know, so I like to keep it quite sort of, you know, streamlined, I think, but you know. Yeah, there's always wrestling about you can add more and, you know, but I'd rather sort of do that concertina in within scenes and try and help that rather than the movie itself, you know. You don't want it to be too fat in places, you know.
We're talking about scary things earlier. One of the scariest things about the movie with the scary bits is that it's like effectively a 2003 like period piece, and it's always scary to see things that you live through be retro. Is there anything that our younger actresses like Isabella and Sydney and them did not understand that you had to explain to them? Because they
listen every day. I felt like Grandma Webb. I'm just like, seriously, like I thought I was the Wunderkind at one point in my life, and now I'm like Grandma Webb, like, you know, every I'm telling you now. And I was like, what do you mean? It wasn't that long ago that we had these phones. It wasn't that long ago. I mean, I do remember Celeste saying to me when we were talking about what was going to be on the radio in the room where they wake up, so spoiler. And I was like, well, I'm not sure yet. And I played some music, and she was like, why am I saying the line, what is this? Played the music that I played. Got the line. Celeste was like, I know how to read this line. Yeah, no problem. So I was like, but they'd never heard Tiffany before. And I was like, wow. And all my crew, even the boys, were singing it. I'm telling you now, I should have turned that, you know, the camera the other way on them. They were all singing along when that was playing. Because they're all my age. They're all like, yeah, we're at the disco to this disco. Hear me now, Grandma Wet.
Oh my goodness. Okay. So like, all right, we'll get off the scary bits.
This is kind of scary, actually.
It kind of is, because I noticed that.
Yeah, no, the gray hair is scary, because this wasn't here, like, you know, before I started this job. That is what's scary.
That's what they call earning your stripes.
That's right.
Thank you very much. And they're all here.
How did you capture Ezekiel, like, walking on the ceiling? Because, like, you notice in the background while they're talking, he just scampering away. It's very unnerving.
I know, right? It's I love that. I think I was inspired by that scene. Is it Exorcist 3? You know, where the doctor's there and the old lady's scurrying along the ceiling. It's just like one of the most eerie things ever. And again, do as much as you can practically, right? Because then, you know, I mean, on the train station, I think that might have been a CG one. But like, as much as I could, I would get Tahar / Remy, the stunt double, up. And he was actually upside down in the diner. That was all rigged with wires. Because I think it feels more real. There's a kind of like a weight to a real human that's hard to sort of recreate. So yeah, I sort of always wanted that sort of creeping up on you and just there as a presence in the background, right? Because that's sometimes more nerving when you know it's coming rather than just keep jump scaring all the time.
Speaking of, yes, it did. This is part of our spoiler section. Spoiler alert. Peter Parker's born in this movie. And I feel like that's huge. And the timeline suggests that this would be Tom Holland's version, since Andrew and Toby are too old. But Tom's version of Peter, his canon birthday is 2001. Should we consider this an alternate version? Or am I overthinking it? Are we overthinking this?
Well, first of all, I don't think we ever say the name. I'm not sure.
Okay.
I'm just saying.
Okay. We're gonna that's be fair.
Like, if we're going to like lay it out, I don't think we say the name. I would definitely say that Madame Web is in a universe of her own. Mm. Hmm.
Got it. Mm. Love that.
There's a reason for the gray hair. There's a reason for the gray hair.
Okay. All right. So with that, there's no post-credit scene as its own movie, which kind of goes against the grain here. Did you ever have ideas for something you wanted to stick at the end?
We played around with some stuff. But, you know, again, I kind of felt like we'd said everything. But it was almost like, you know, because I don't want to go into spoiler turf, but the way the story ended and then we have an ending and then something, right? I felt that I was kind of given the something in the end. If you know what I mean. Mm-hmm. So when you watch it, you'll see, because it's like there's the scene where we sort of end and then there's another thing. And then there's this scene, which could have been it. But then because she has clairvoyance, I was able to see it in the movie because she saw that credit scene earlier. So we might as well just have it up front.
Ah. Now I know exactly what you're talking
right?
about.
Do you see what I'm saying? When she says, yep, the thing and the thing and the that. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I was like, we might be done. I didn't want to outstay my welcome.
Perfect. Touching exactly on that, you've said you'd want to leave them wanting more, and this movie absolutely sets up a sequel that I very much am ready. Let me have it. Or is that something that you want to make? Or do you want to make a potential follow-up? Do you know what it would be? Do you have the vision?
I don't have clairvoyance, unfortunately. So I can't answer that. I'd have to ask Cassandra Webb. But like, I finished this on Friday. It was kind of like right to the wire. We delivered it. And so I'm definitely ready for a vacation. But I think these characters will definitely sort of live on in me for a long time. It's been such a big part of my life, such a privilege. You know, I've just loved, you know, working with this amazing cast, this amazing character back in the Marvel, you know, world and through the comic books has been, you know, truly, truly such a privilege and a joy. So, you know, I'm so grateful for that. And, you know, if they knock on my door, I'll let you know.
Awesome. Cool. SJ Clarkson, it is absolutely our pleasure to have you on Phase Zero today. Aaron, Jamie, thank you so much for co-hosting this interview with me.
Thank you,
Sony and Madam Web, everybody. If you have anything else you want to talk about, send us your way. Thanks, SJ.
So amazing to meet you guys. Thank you so
much.
Bye.